In deep, shadowed forests, down back alleys, and desolate reaches of road, strange encounters echo. This is a haunted world. But there are those who are called to seek these stories out, record and preserve them so that we all might peer more eagerly into the chasm of the unknown. From horse skull entities lurking in abandoned shacks to invisible giants thundering through the woods. Join us on this episode of Belief Hole as we invite best-selling author and renowned storyteller Steve Stockton to share some of his own brushes with the bizarre and explore the beliefs and theories of the unsettling, the uncanny, and the unexplained.
Conspiracy.
Synchronicity.
Sasquatch.
Homunculus.
Alien races.
Satanism in Hollywood.
MK Ultra.
Tartaria.
There's like a whole... I've been watching this one guy.
Close the door, Ed.
Jury. Close your door.
What's the,
Inner Earth Disagreements.
Ghost Dad.
I like that movie.
Dogman.
Bohemian Growing.
Felt.
Magicians are demons.
Specters and
spirits. Summonings.
Occultism.
Strange disappearances.
Sky whale phenomenon.
Yes!
Alternative history.
Shadow people.
Shh, quiet, I'm trying to say words with the mouth.
It's getting dicey out there.
Poltergeists.
That's cool.
Anunnaki.
What is the moon?
Elf towers.
I would never talk about that. That's old.
Y2K.
Cover-ups.
Apocalyptic catastrophe.
Vampire.
Well, hello, hello. Welcome to Belief Hole. I'm Chris.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm John.
And I'm Steve Stockton.
Yes! And we are the brothers of Belief Hole and a very special guest today in the hole.
For today, I'm the fourth brother of the hole.
There you go.
That's right. What a day for us. And the beard to match. Yes, we are honored to have you here, Steve.
It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, so for the audience, we've obviously have done very few interviews in our day, and it's been a long time coming. I think this one specifically, we've followed Steve Stockton for a long time. We've read his books. We've used him in episodes of the show. You guys be familiar. Episodes like Containment Theory, I think Glimmer Man, some other episodes. So we are honored today to have a guest like Steve Stockton.
Yes.
Veteran outdoorsman, right? Paranormal researcher.
Absolutely.
Best-selling author. Yeah, super excited to have you here, Steve. Thank you for agreeing to join us in the hole.
Oh, super excited to be here. And out of all the shows I've been on, this was the one that I looked forward to the most. I was the most hyped over this.
Yes.
You can ask Nicole. I was so excited today. This is just, I've been looking forward to it since we first started talking.
That's
about
great.
It. I'm absolutely blown away. Honored and humbled to be here, gentlemen. Thank you.
Well, we're humbled for that, Steve. Seriously.
Take that, George Norrie.
Yes!
Who I do love. Yeah, thank you for coming. We got so much to talk about today. We're going to talk about, I mean, probably everything and anything under the sun, because, you know, you've looked into so many things. Of course, you're well known for covering all sorts of topics, especially your missing persons cases that you've been doing, Among the Missing, incredible channel that you've been doing lately.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But we're also going to get into probably discussions on Appalachian folklore, probably some typical sort of spooks and spirits discussions. I want to get into a little bit of discussion on spiritual architecture, sort of like boundaries
yes.
in the supernatural world. I mean, I think it'll come in throughout conversations. And I especially am excited to hear your personal experiences. So yeah, I think we're going to go all directions.
Yeah. All over the road. That's where I'm most comfortable anyway.
Awesome.
The hole is wide and deep.
The hole is wide and mysterious. I was going to ask you, Steve, obviously you've been interested in this stuff for a long time. Was there something in your life that sort of drove you or compelled you into this line of research, into this line of a career and investigation? Yeah, what got your brain itching in a kind of a curious way that there might be something more?
Well, now, are we talking paranormal or are we talking missing? They were kind of around the same time, but two very specific incidents.
Oh, interesting. Let's start with let's go way back to I guess the first time you started, you maybe realized something in life that there is more to reality than what I understand. Any personal experiences that you might have experienced?
Yeah, well, I was kind of raised in it. My grandmother, on my mother's side, she was a self-proclaimed gypsy witch. Now, I don't know where the gypsy part came in, because she was born and raised in the Case Cove area of the Smokies. But I'm thinking somewhere back in the lineage, there was an old country that they came from or something like that. But she told fortunes, read tea leaves, coffee grounds, animal entrails. Oh, wow. Practiced phrenology. She could tell things about your personality by feeling the bumps on your head.
Wow.
And so I was just crying. I mean, this was people, they were in a part of the spiritualism movement around the turn of the last century.
Right.
My mom came from a big family, 9 brothers. She was the only girl. I couldn't get away with anything. She knew every boy trick. But they regularly held seances and table tappings. And like I said, my grandmother told fortunes and stuff. So I was exposed to it on that side. And then the other side, my dad, he grew up hardscrabble, hardcore Appalachian, but he got out and went to the University of Tennessee. Later would work at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory as a scientist. So I had the science and the superstition.
Very cool.
And I'm right there bewildered in the middle.
Yeah.
And I said that to Nicole one time, that God took the heart of a romantic, the mind of a dreamer, and the soul of a poet and a writer, put it in some red Tennessee clay, breathed life into it, and I sprang forth out of the union of science and superstition, totally bewildered.
Wow. That's a good way to put it.
That's a great place to be.
But as far as the first thing, I was about 5 going on 6, and I was out in the yard one day. We lived 212 feet from the country road, and I know because later on I measured it when I was doing BMX sprints. I was about halfway out in the yard, so maybe 100 feet from where this transpired. Lived at the bottom of a T-intersection, came down this way, went up to the other road. The nearest neighbor, my friend John, his family, they lived 2 miles down the road. So that's, you know, not close at all, but that was the nearest neighbor. We lived out in the country, had 26 and a half acres, so only 5 of that cleared off. So I had a lot of woods and things to play in. And saw a car coming down the hill. I thought it was his mom's car. So I just started walking toward the road. Well, it turned out it wasn't his mom at all. When it stopped, I didn't recognize the car or the person. And then out from behind the car, I see a child run from behind the car. And I mean, we're talking a toddler, like maybe 2 years old. And it ran across in front of the car. And I'm thinking, holy cow, that guy in there can't see over the car to even see the kid because it's just right there. But he never saw it, never registered that he saw anything out of the ordinary. And this little kid runs across the road at an angle down into our yard. And if you've ever watched small children who barely mastered the art of walking, sometimes they'll start running and they don't know how to stop, so they just fall. Well, that's what this little boy did. He was wearing a blue outfit. I can still see him to this day. White shirt, blue shorts, white little white shoes, and blue ball cap. He fell, and when he fell, he just no longer existed. And I didn't take my eyes off the spot. I walked straight to that spot. Meantime, the car's turned and gone. And, there was no hole that he could have fallen into. And I knew this. I knew every inch of that yard, the cleared off part. There was nothing in the yard that I could have mistaken for a small boy. Nothing, absolutely nothing. I even got a shovel and went back and dug to see if there was something buried there or something I'd missed. Never found anything and don't know what that was. And I asked my grandmother about that. And her cryptic answer was, sometimes you'll see things that are meant for you. Sometimes you'll see things that are meant for other people and you just happen to see them. And sometimes you'll see things you don't know what they are or what they mean ever, except maybe in retrospect, if even then. And that was her answer. So it's a non-answer. And it didn't scare me. It didn't frighten me. But I was just like, you know, little kids don't run into the yard and disappear. There's something that's out there. And I'd had some minor experiences prior to that, like seeing like almost like colored Christmas lights. But it wasn't Christmas time, and they were flying around in the house. And I was giggling at them and watching. My dad was trying to rock me to sleep. And I'm like, I'm trying to catch these lights. And he's like, what are you doing? And I said, I'm trying to get these lights, Daddy.
Wow.
He couldn't see them. I have no idea what that was. Wow. So that was probably the first one that I remember. But the one, the real one that really set me on that course was the little boy. And I've researched that road. That name, the road was named after the Sparks family. That was my mom's family. They had a dairy farm on that road. They had lived there for decades. The only person that had ever been killed on that road, there was a child, was much older, 12 years old. My grandfather accidentally backed a cattle truck over his favorite nephew and killed him.
Oh, wow.
That was the only child that had died on that road in all those years that I could find out. So later in life, I thought maybe that was some sort of attachment or something connected to that car.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, so that road dead-ended into the lake. I wonder if there wasn't a body in the trunk of that car that he was going to dump in the lake, and I saw
oh, wow.
Spirit. I don't know. It's just weird, but that was my introduction really to the paranormal and thinking that there's something out there. There's things that we don't get, we don't understand.
Wow, that's fascinating. It's interesting, Steve. So you had that experience and that earlier experience, your kind of first memory with the Christmas light sort of things in the house. And obviously you've had more experiences that we'll get to. So it's just interesting. So do you feel like you're someone that's somehow connected to the other world a little bit? Have you had that sort of...
I think so. And I think that connection comes through my grandmother. Now, sometimes things like that will skip a generation and things. My mom didn't have that much, but I have it. My daughter doesn't have it so much. But and my granny, out of all the grandchildren, and there was a lot, having 10 children, I was the favorite. And the reason being, I was born, well, down south, they call it a veil over your face. Also being with a caul or being born in caul.
Yeah.
All it is the afterbirth. The amniotic sac was still stretched over my head and they had to cut it away. My mom was out of it. They had knocked her out with twilight sleep or something. And my grandmother attended my birth. She didn't assist. She would have. She had done some midwifing and stuff back in the hills. But in her superstitious mind, that marked me as a special child. Mm-hmm. And she would get me alone. She lived in this big Victorian farmhouse because they'd moved from where the dairy farm used to be when they dammed up the river down there and made Milton Hill Lake. They left that dairy farm sitting on a quarter of an acre. So there went the dairy farm. So they moved about 25 miles away and had another farm. They did truck farming and stuff there. So we would go visit her, and she'd be in this big old dark Victorian house. And what had once been a formal dining room, she turned it into a quilting room. And her and my Aunt Frenchie would cut quilt pieces while they watched their soap operas, their stories, they called them, during the rest of the year. And then in the wintertime, she would sit by herself in there and piece quilts together. And that was verboten. You were not allowed in the quilting room. There was, you know, sewing machines and things that you weren't supposed to mess with in there. And she would get me in there, and she would scare the daylights out of me. I mean, she looked like a witch, like a Hansel and Gretel type witch. She
played the part.
Was arthritic and kind of hunkered over, and her hands were kind of gnarled up. And I was scared to death of her when I was little. But she would get me in there, and she would teach me these things, some superstition or some sayings or a charm or a way to get bad luck off or to bring good luck to you. And if I could repeat it back to her satisfaction, then she'd give me a Hershey bar or maybe a crisp new dollar bill. And, you know, in 1967, 68, 69, dollar bill was a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, yeah.
Comic books, I think, were 12 cents. So I could get, you know, a fistful of comic books and have enough left over to get an icy or something. You know, so dollar was a lot of money. One thing I'll never forget, it was about, like I said, 25 miles to her house. Well, on the way there, there was a spot in the road where years and years before, there's a farmhouse there up on a little hill, and some kids have been playing ball in the yard. One kid chased a ball out into the road and was hit and killed there on the spot. So something about kids being killed in roads, but it was an older kid. He was like 12 or something, I think. And I would always get just a creepy feeling, because that was a cautionary tale, you know, to me. Don't chase a ball out in the yard, or you could end up like that poor kid. So one night we were passing by there. We were on the way to her house. It was a Friday night. And I was laying in the back seat reading a comic book. This was late 60s. You know, seatbelts, what's that? Nobody cared. And I got this little tingle sensation up the back of my spine. I raised up and looked out the window. Sure enough, we were passing by that house in the road where that kid had perished, sadly, years before. Well, we get to my grandmother's a few minutes later. My mom and dad are carrying stuff in. And as soon as we get there, she hustles me off into the quilting room as usual. And I don't remember what she was teaching me that night, but she said something about feeling things. And she said, "You feel things." And I said, "Yeah, I mean, you can hurt my feelings, or if you pinch me, I can feel that." And she said, "No, I mean, you feel things, like that spot on the highway on the way here tonight." And I was just like, oh my God, she can read my mind. And that scared me, you know, like I've got to be careful what I think now, because Mama, we called her Mama. Mama could hear me. But I heard other stories that were doing stuff like that. I ran into a lady in her 60s, and as a teenager, she had gone to my grandmother with two other girls to get their fortune told. And they had to walk a couple of miles to get there. It was out in the country. And this one lady named Anna, she was kind of laughing and making fun of me. She said, "Well, I'll go along with you and I'll do this, but I don't believe in it. I think that old lady's full of hooey." Well, they get there, they knock on the door. Grandma comes to the door, yes. And they, "Mama Bessie," everybody in the community called her Mama Bessie. "Mama Bessie, we're here to get our fortunes told." And she said, "Okay." She said, "I'll tell yours and I'll tell yours, but I won't tell yours because you don't believe in me and you mocked me. And Anna said you could have knocked me over with a feather because they were miles away from our house when this conversation transpired.
Wow. Wow.
So that's what I grew up around, is that kind of stuff. No wonder I'm like I am.
That's fascinating. Yeah, Steve, it's interesting to hear this perspective because it's almost like the story of like a family line and then the grandson with the ability or the second sight. And then you become sort of an acolyte for your grandmother. And in a way, maybe she wanted to pass on and encourage those abilities.
And she did. And I was the one, just because of her superstition and being born with a veil and all that. And again, I claim no abilities, but I have had flashes of precognition and things like that. I know what's going to happen. Sometimes I've been places. One of the strangest deja vu I ever had was in Ohio.
Yes, really?
Little kid, it was the first time we'd been up through there. I was maybe 5 or 6. We were on the way to visit my mom's brother in Michigan. And I recognized everything. Hmm. And I said, we've been here before. And they're like, no, you've never been through Ohio. And I'm like, no. I kept insisting. And I told them, I said, just a little way up this road where there's a white house on the right side of the road. And there's like 3 outbuildings. And they're each a little less worse shape than the one previous. And there's a swing set back in the backyard. Well, sure enough, a couple miles later, we go around a curve. There's a white house, like I predicted. There's a garage and then another little shed and a garden shack. And in the backyard was a swing set.
Wow.
How'd I know? I don't know. But
How old were you?
Between 5 and 6. It was 1969. I think they're 68 or 69. So that was my first trip through Ohio, one of many. Now, my parents were antique dealers, and sometimes we would go on buying trips and go up into Ohio and go to farm sales and estate sales and things. And it was just such a magical place. And there, I think it's still there. There was a little town called Findlay, Ohio.
Yeah.
And there was a place there called Ghost Town.
Oh, yeah.
It was like this 1800s village type thing. And the guy had, it was just in some guy's yard. And we stopped, and it wasn't open. And the guy came out, so we got their own private tour.
Oh, that's
and,
cool.
And I have nothing but fond memories of Ohio.
Well, as 3 Ohio boys, that is good.
And I always used to say, any state that gave us Dean Martin, Larry Flint, and the Cramps can't be all bad.
You're right. That is an interesting combination.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of the most obscure or divergent things from Ohio. I mean, you've got astronauts and
all
that.
We had a president, I think.
Dean Martin, Larry Flint, and the Cramps. That's
great
the
combination.
The unholy triangle there.
Oh, I was going to say, oh, you're... not to linger too much on this, but so that experience you had, obviously, you mentioned as a deja vu type, but obviously could have been, you know, precognition considering your family line and your history, and also, but maybe reincarnation. Maybe there's a little bit of past life, Ohio lineage.
That's
there.
What I was thinking.
Yeah, I've thought about that. I dream of places that I know very well. I go to the same place sometimes.
Yes.
Me too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We've had that conversation.
And there's things that are there that are consistent.
Yes.
And, those are some of the most wonderful dreams because it's another place.
For sure.
I think we dream travel.
I do too.
I don't know if it's another dimension or an alternate reality or what, but I mean, I go places and I know people there and I know where things are. And you know, if I go up here around the hill, there's a gas station that I always like to stop at and get coffee.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's in a dream.
This is where you keep going back to them over and over again. You know, that's the strange part. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The same place.
It feels like home.
And it'll be, you know, time will have passed. Things will be different. Sometimes it's rained and the streets are flooded.
Right.
Or one time there was like some sort of street carnival or something going on. So it's like this place that exists.
Same location.
And carries on when I'm not there. And then whenever I pop back in there, well, let's see what's happening now.
Yeah.
And it's bizarre.
That's so cool that you've had those experiences because we've talked about that as brothers.
We've all talked about it, but we don't hear other people talk about it very frequently.
I don't think I've talked to a friend who's had this experience, but where you have regular towns, or it could even be a version of somewhere that you've been or have lived, but it's always different in the same way, or it's a completely new place, but it's consistent when you go back there in your dream.
There are consistencies.
Yeah.
Like the buildings and the streets are the same.
The geology and the
or people.
But
even.
There are the people are doing something, and I've even recognized people.
Yes, exactly.
But they were doing something different.
They have a history.
There's in one of these dreams, I'm back in high school, and it's no high school that I ever went to, and I'm this age. And I'm wandering around with all these kids and nobody's paying any attention to me. And I've got my cover story. If they ask me, like, why are you here? I say, well, turns out I didn't actually graduate. There's some classes I had to take over for my diploma to be valid. They just found out about it, you know, now 40-something years later, and I'm here. But nobody questions me. But I know where I'm going. I know, like, if I go up this hallway and turn down this little side hall, that's where our sciences room is, or the math wing is over here, or the lunchroom is downstairs. Yeah. The office and the library is over here.
Very strange. Gosh,
where does that even come from? That's just amazing.
Fascinating.
No, it's incredible.
Dreams are very weird.
You know, we did an episode not too long ago. I don't know if you heard it, Steve. It was on called Nightmare Land, based off of, and I wish I'd, Lex Lonehood Nover, I think is his name. I think he was a producer on Coast to Coast or something. But he had a really fascinating book about dream research and all sorts of night phenomenon, experiences at night and with the subconscious. But one of the stories we covered, I think it was in the expansion, was about these characters that were, they would meet someone in a dream, a person would meet someone in a dream, but something that would happen in that dream would linger and actually come to fruition upon waking, like the burning of a cigarette of a dream character woman who was sitting on your lap and who you offended, so she slapped you in the face and burned her cigarette out of your hand, and then the man woke up and had a burn on his hand. Very like anomalous sort of experience.
Yeah, but, now, I've never had anything that specific, yeah, but right. I can taste things in my dreams.
Oh, that's interesting.
I've woken up before.
With the flavor.
And still have a taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
And the other day I dreamed we were already married, and I was admiring my wedding ring in the dream, and I woke up and I looked for it and I didn't see it, and I thought, I've lost it. Where did it go? But wow. It seemed so real.
That's crazy.
Smells. I can smell things in my dreams. Now, I am an insomniac, have been lifelong, I mean, even as a child. I rarely sleep more than 2 or 3 hours a night.
Really?
And I go directly into REM sleep. Sometimes I'm dreaming before my eyes are even closed.
Yeah.
And I have these very vivid, almost lucid dreams sometimes. And I don't know if it's because I'm wired that way and then my brain, there's no sleep stages for me. It's just right into REM sleep.
I wonder if that could relate to how you've had so many experiences in your life, so many brushes with the paranormal. If there is a connection between that. That sort of brain chemistry.
That membrane is weakened in a sense.
Yeah, the weakened membrane.
Yeah, it's something. Because I thought about that every house I've ever lived in was either haunted or had some sort of paranormal activity or something weird to some degree. And then finally, a few years ago, I came to the conclusion it's not the houses, it's me. I mean, yeah. Even someplace that's only mildly active when I live there, there's a lot that goes on. I lived in a house in Las Vegas, probably the most active place I've ever lived in. And my roommate that I lived with there, she had lived there prior to me moving in. She never experienced that much at all until I started experiencing things. And then it like,
magnet.
She could see it and hear it, started seeing it and hearing it too. But
you were like an amplifier.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like an antenna.
Yeah.
That I pick up those signals and then transmit them back out. I can't explain it.
Bad roommate.
A lot of people think that sounds like a bunch of hooey, but I know what I've seen. I know what I've felt. And it won't convince me otherwise. Like, putting your hand on a hot stove by, it's going to burn you. And then somebody say, oh, you didn't get burned. That didn't happen.
Yeah, right.
But I know what I saw, heard, felt.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
There was one of the stories that I'd read in your, what was the name of the book? Oh, My Strange World. And for those listening, My Strange World, that's Steve's book on his personal experiences, which is a great book. And if Steve has, hopefully we'll hold it up.
I have a copy right here. Imagine that.
Yes. I hope you have it. Links will be in the show notes, guys. Yes, that's it right there.
It's backwards. I don't know if it just looks that way, but the way that came about, I wrote the first book, Strange Things in the Woods.
Right.
Got that one too,
yeah,
plugged there.
That's great.
And the way that book came about, Strange Things in the Woods, it was actually at that grandmother's funeral that I was talking about. She passed away when I was 13 years old, and I was at her funeral, and I was standing there looking at her in her coffin, and she was just so still and so quiet. I mean, obviously, she's deceased, but she was always in motion, always cooking. She fed for that. All those kids and had an army of field hands on that farm. She had two ovens in her kitchen, you know, and kept them going all the time. And she was just so still and so quiet. And I thought about everything she'd ever told me, every tall tale, every superstition, every bit of folklore and everything. And I thought, you know, that dies right there with her because she wasn't interested in sharing it with any of the other kids. They didn't care. They were into football and hunting and fishing and things that didn't do a thing for me. And I thought, you know, I'm not going to let that happen. That day at her funeral, I took that mantle upon myself. I'm going to write these stories out, all these stories that I've heard. Now, there's not so much of her in this book. This was more friends and friends of family. But that was what started it all. And then I would go around after I wrote this one. It was successful. And I would go on shows like this. And people would say, well, you know, that's great. Those are other people's stories that you've collected. What about you? Have you ever had any experiences, Steve? And I'd, you know, trot out one or another because I'd had, you know, a handful of them. And then one day I thought, you know, I might have enough to do a book. And then That's where this came from. So this is actually my favorite one that I've ever written. That and they're all. It's like trying to pick a favorite child, I guess. But
right.
That one's just special to me because it is my part of my experiences. I've probably got enough to do another book.
Yeah. So for the listeners who aren't watching the video right now on YouTube, he's talking about My Strange World. That's kind of your autobiographical encyclopedia of your some of your experiences.
Some of the things that have happened to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because we actually did a. We had done an episode and I was using as a resource your book, Strange Things in the Woods. So that first book. And I, because you're sharing the stories in the written first person. So I thought that this one was a personal account. So I attributed it to your experience, but it was the story of, I forget the name of the title, but it was about someone who had come across clothes laid out in the woods as if the people wearing them had kind of disintegrated into the earth.
This goes into the missing phenomena, right?
Yeah. That was a great story.
Yeah. That was vanishing people or dissolving people or something.
I think vanishing, yeah.
I haven't looked at these in a while. I get confused what's in what book. But that was a girl that I worked with. Her and another girl had gone to I don't even think it was a state park. It might have been. And they were just messing around in the woods. There were hiking trails there. And then in the early 90s, they had geocaching and stuff there. And they discovered a primitive campsite, fairly primitive. I think there was a tent and some stuff there. And evidence that people had been there fairly recently. And then just a little ways over, right in the edge of the woods, there was two sets of clothing, perfectly laid down. And she said it was a man's shirt, like the shirt was tucked into the khakis, even had a belt still on it, socks. The socks went into like a pair of penny loafers. And then right next to him, there was a woman. I think she was wearing like a blouse and a skirt, stockings going into shoes. And the sleeve of the man's shirt was over the sleeve of the woman's shirt. It looked literally like they had just laid down and disappeared, dissolved. And they kind of poked it with a stick and heard what sounded like either keys or a change in the pocket of the man's pants. And the one girl that I didn't know, she got really freaked out about it. It's like, we need to get out of here. I mean, she's like crying and sobbing and stuff. And the friend that was telling me about it, she said they watched the papers for weeks. They didn't go to the police, you know, they were scared, but to see if there was any missing person reports or reports of bodies being found, and there was never anything. So either it was a very elaborate
art project,
delayed reaction prank, or something strange. I mean,
yeah, that's bizarre.
And that's the way these are presented. They're not saying it's this, that, or the other. It's generally, it's up to you what you believe.
Right. And I think we're on a similar page with that sort of thing, where we enjoy sharing people's experiences or doing our own research too, and expressing ideas and concepts, but never telling anybody what to think.
Yeah.
We're not evangelists about one theory or another when it comes to a lot of this stuff.
Exactly. And I think Stephen King said it best. Now, he was talking about fiction, but he said he will show you the shape under the sheet with the sheet over, but he will never lift back the sheet and show you what's under there.
Yeah. That's a good analogy.
That's a great quote.
Because whatever you conjure up in your head
is
going to be 10 times scarier than what he can describe, because it's what affects you personally.
Exactly. Reader response.
Your personal fears are under that sheet. So I totally get that, and I agree with that.
Very cool. I don't know if I read this or I heard on an interview, but I enjoyed hearing you say this, because we talk about this on the show a lot. We're all very kindred spirits in this way. And we tell a lot of different stories on the show, whether it's a historical account or listener stories, and find the corroborative accounts. But we always try to find the more obscure stories, or at least those are our favorites. And I forget where I read this, read it or something, but it seems that's where you are aligned to. You really enjoy out of the work that you do. I think you said like you don't have a favorite of a story that you've been given or someone's reported to you, but you do really enjoy the ones that are a little more offbeat. Or a little bit like, what is that?
Just the most bizarre.
The one-offs.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you have your Mothman and your Bigfoot and stuff like that, and those are all well and good. But I enjoy the things that just happen maybe once, maybe one time.
Yeah.
I'm a legend tripper. I'm not a researcher, an investigator, maybe a little bit of research, but I'm not an investigator. I've had people, oh, Steve, a paranormal investigator, but I'm not.
Right.
I'm there to just bask in that ambience. Like, I'm getting ready to move to New England. There's so many places I want to go. And just be there where that happened. Now, the one experience I have had there by doing that, went to Dover, Massachusetts, and the home of the Dover Demon.
Yeah.
And that was just a thing that was seen on like maybe two consecutive nights back in the 70s and never seen again. Although there was a later story that somebody had seen something similar in that wood years before. But I like to go where the one-offs are like that, or or some of the repeating ones that are more obscure, like the especially in the South, every little town has got a white lady or a crybaby bridge.
Yeah, up here too.
Yep, we got one.
I love to find those places.
Yeah.
When I go into a new place, I'll seek out the senior citizens. I like to do, like, go to Senior Citizen Center and do a storytelling.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because some of those people, they're just looking for something to do. And you've got the people that will sit there and do what? There's no bingo tonight, so they just do their knitting and crocheting and don't pay much attention. But then you get some people, it really lights them up. And then after it's over, they all file out, but there'll be two or three that'll stay behind and say, let me tell you about what I saw one time.
That's awesome.
Or what happened to me.
That's great.
I love that. Senior citizens are one of our most valuable resources as far as folklore and things like that. And then the other side of that coin, I'll find the young kids. Is there a skateboard park? I'll go down there and say, hey, you guys ever seen anything weird?
That's awesome.
If I wanted to see a ghost, where would I go? Are there any cryptid stories, or where's the parking spot that guys like to take their girls to because it's spooky?
I love that.
Yeah.
So you hit the kids and you hit the senior citizens, and you can find all the legends in that little area. And then you just go there and think, this is where they saw that. And
yeah, it's an amazing approach.
Another place I'm really looking forward to is Rehoboth, the Red-Headed Hitchhiker.
Oh, yeah.
That one's always lit me up. Now, you have those vanishing hitchhikers. There's one of those in the Smoky Mountains. They're all over the place. And I don't know if it's just a legend that's been passed along like the telephone game, because I would hear similar legends from my dad that my mom had heard growing up. And they lived, you know, a couple hours apart by car. So, but the same story, but just different people in different circumstances. And I wonder if that just got passed along Somebody telling it would say, well, they don't know where Bug Tuzzle is, so we'll make it a Hollywood, you know, because everybody knows where that is. Something like that, you know, to make it more location specific, to make it more believable.
Yeah, the details change a little.
So it gets multiplied.
Right? Because I heard a lot of those urban legends as a kid, they were told for truth. Prior to Walmart coming along, we used to have shops in the Knoxville, Tennessee area called Almart, A-L-M-A-R-T. Well, there was a story about a little boy that was butchered in the bathroom there.
Oh, man.
And the lady that did my mom's hair told her about it. Of course, it was a friend of a friend, and it really happened.
Right. Urban legend.
Mom, you know, told me, well, if you go to Walmart or Almart, don't ever go to the bathroom unless you take one of us with you. Well, I had to go. I couldn't find my parents. So I went outside all the way around behind the back of the building and urinated. And in reality, that was probably the more
much more dangerous,
most dangerous thing I could have done. But I wasn't going in the bathroom, you know. And you heard stuff like the kid that was water skiing and hit the nest of water moccasins. I heard that growing up for the gospel truth. You know, it happened to a friend of a friend.
That's freaky.
Another lady at a hair salon, but a different one. And that was the thing in the South. A lot of these ladies, their husbands worked out the National Laboratory or the plants there in Oak Ridge that made really good money. Well, the wives would set up a beauty shop, maybe one or two chairs in the basement. And then that way they could do hair and then get all the gossip in the neighborhood, because the ladies would come and sit and have coffee, get their hair did, and tell all these stories about what the neighbors were into. Another popular one I heard in that neighborhood was the Avon lady that wasn't a lady at all. And had asked to use the bathroom and had been in there a while, and the lady of the house went to check on him. She opens the door, and there's a naked man in there. And she runs across to the neighbor's house. He comes back with a gun. They get there. The guy has gone out the window, but left behind is a lady's dress and a hat and an Avon bag. But inside the sample bag, instead of Avon, there's like a hatchet and a rope and a butcher knife or something, you know.
That'll keep you up.
And again, it happened right up the road. It really happened.
It always happens right up the road.
Yeah. And then you talk to other people. But I've looked into some of those. And as far as you can tell, Jan Harald Brunvand wrote an excellent series on those. The Vanishing Hitchhiker, The Choking Doberman, The Midnight Baby Train. And I think there was one more that just really just tore my childhood up. Like, No, this is true. I've heard this. I know this is true.
Well, it's interesting. I wonder how much of it is, you know, obviously there's folklore, there's tales that get spun up and spread out around in communities. But I wonder if some of these things, there's patterns because the circumstances of the experience of a death, for example, like the woman jumping off a bridge or, you know, that sort of thing, woman in white or the bride.
Crybaby bridge.
It might be cliches because sometimes it's a certain situation where there's a lot of powerful emotion connected to the experience. Obviously, if there's a someone on her wedding night who's left at the aisle and, you know, jumps off the cliff or things like that, where you create that
or hangs herself. That's right. The Greenbrier in Gatlinburg, Greenbrier restaurant has that legend attached to it.
Gatlinburg.
And supposedly one of the reasons it's haunted, the Lydia, the ghost there, the lonesome ghost, did hang herself because she was jilted. But one thing that really makes her mad, they have on the menu a dessert called Lydia's Chocolate Suicide for Two, which is kind dark. Of in poor taste.
But a little bit. It's a dark chocolate. A little poor taste.
Dark chocolate. There
dark
you go.
Chocolate. It's yeah. funny because my dad, we now live in the town where my dad used to teach high school back in the 70s, 80s, and I mm-hmm. guess all the way through his retirement, so up into the early 2000s. He was a biology teacher, but mm-hmm. in our town, Rogues Hollow is a pretty famous in our region.
You know, it's got to be awesome if it's got a name like that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Rogues Hollow was a place where it was, you know, it was a big coal mining area, and they had a Silver Creek that went through, and very small, but it's in a holler, which there aren't a lot up in this part of Ohio, but there was one here, right. And we live right at the top of the other side of it now, which is cool because we drive through Rogues Hollow every time we come back to the house.
Tons of lore. Every time to go to the show to record, I drive through it. So
through Rogues Hollow. So at nighttime, it's a little spooky. After a spooky episode.
That's awesome. Next time I'm in Ohio, I'm going to go to Rogues Hollow.
Come out and visit. That'd be great. Yeah, we'll take you down.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
So my dad, he was teaching out up at the high school here. But the urban legend, one of the most famous urban legends in Rogues Hollow is there's a crybaby bridge like there is in a lot of small towns around the country. But what he used to do back in the 70s is he would take his kids down there, is high school students at nighttime, and often they would have a pretty terrifying experience because what he would do is he would put a tape recorder on a stone under the bridge, and he would set it so by the time that they got down there, it would start playing the crying of a baby.
Oh, man.
Which was part of the legend. So my dad liked to play those jokes. That's probably where we get some of it from.
Yeah, that's awesome. But I've found that a lot of times places that have a strange name, and I know there's people currently that talk about that, but Lauren Coleman wrote about that back in the, I think in 83 was when that book came out, Strange America, mm-hmm. and talked about it. And he was just continuing research that Charles Fort had started like back in the 20s or 30s or 40s or whenever he wrote.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's out. I'm in New Mexico for now. And, you know, there's a lot of devil names and Diablo and
right.
stuff. And
Devil's Den.
You don't know if it's named that because of something that's happened or
right.
the act of naming it that maybe created like conjured. A toll or something, if you will, and it's drawn to it. But
I think both are possible.
I'm not too far from the four corners, and there's all kinds of weird stuff out here.
Yeah.
Dogmen and the Howler and all kinds of wandering spirits. And supposedly there's been some chupacabra sightings in New Mexico recently that he made it up from Texas.
Yeah, that's a whole topic that we haven't even got into.
That's a whole thing. But those crybaby stories, like I said, any little community down south, there's a crybaby bridge.
Yeah.
But the most convincing one I ever heard was, I didn't hear him tell it because he passed away when I was 6 months old. But my grandfather, Mamaw Bessie's husband, Pop, he called him Pop Sparks. When he was a young man, there was a house in the community where he lived at. I think it was Ramsey or Goose Paddle or somewhere like that up near the Smokies. But when he was a young man, there was a local house where they told that story. A lady had murdered her baby and buried it in the cellar behind the furnace. And the story was that you could go in there on a rainy, stormy night and you could hear the baby cry. Well, he and some of his friends around the same age, they were teenagers, went there one night, and sure enough, and my mom heard him tell the story, he said he could hear that baby cry just as plain. And four of the six of them run off. I remember we were at the funeral home one time, and there was some old man there. And my mom said, "You see that guy over there?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "He's the one of the ones that ran off when Pop heard the baby cry." But they went to the house, stormy night, just like the story said, they heard a baby cry, and it did seem to be coming from downstairs in the basement. But they went down there, they looked, they couldn't see anything. But it would move around, and they would hear it upstairs, and then back downstairs. Wherever they went, they would hear it elsewhere. And they had actually planned on going back at some point and digging up the cellar to see if that was true. But before that ever happened, lightning struck the house. and burned it to the ground, and then he never went back. But again, it's just a crybaby bridge story, but told in the framework of a house. So
yeah, interesting.
According to my grandfather, it was true, but who knows?
I think that's the key there. Some are true. You know, I think it's easy for people to dismiss everything as...
I think all those urban legends, there is a nugget of truth.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Somewhere there was an Avon lady that had a hatchet or something in their bag.
Avon calling.
or there was a hitchhiker that disappeared out of a car or...
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
There's something in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's those nuggets. And I love the fact that you, going to, especially to nursing homes or wherever you're getting from the oldest of people that are not too long for this world and collecting those stories, preserving them.
Yeah, because some of those stories, it could be like my grandmother. If I don't collect them and don't listen to them, that's it. I mean, they're done.
Yeah.
And the good thing, you know, all these books I've written, they're available in ebooks. And, you know, technically the internet is forever.
Right.
These stories, just about everybody in Strange Things in the Woods, except some of the youngest people that I talked to, have passed on. Some of the most amazing stories in here, those people were dead years before I ever wrote it, but they live on through my stories, and I love that.
That's awesome. That's what it's about. Preserving that knowledge and the stories and just the mystery. I feel like that's such an important part of what we all do.
And that's just part of the storytelling process. I consider myself, I'm a raconteur, I'm a storyteller. It's true stories.
Yeah.
But I don't want to just read it, you know, or recount it. I try to put as much emotion into it. That's why that was written in first person. I told the stories the way they were told to me.
Right.
Mistakes and slang and colloquialisms and everything, because I think that adds a realism. I could sit there and tell you the story in my words, but it just, to me, wouldn't have the same weight as me telling it in the person's words that told it to me.
You're giving life to the original story.
Steve, can you tell us one of your most impactful stories from one of your books? Like, can you give us maybe one of your most meaningful ones that you've come across in your life?
There was one, and it's in Strange Things in the Woods, and it's a very poignant story about a man. He's out hiking, and he sits down under a tree to rest. There's some rocks kind of piled up there. Well, he sits on one of the rocks and it kind of rocks. It moves and he hears something underneath it. So he moves the rocks and two or three good flat rocks and moves them out of the way. And he finds an aluminum attaché case there that's bound in wire. And he's thinking, oh man, I found somebody's cash that's stashed from a bank robbery, or it's going to be loaded with drugs, or there's going to be something good in here. So he sneaks it out of the woods and he gets it home. Cleans it up, cuts the wires off of it, opens it up, and there's a skeleton of a dog in there, along with a laminated poem about Brewster, the best hunting dog that ever lived. So he quietly put it all back together, wrapped it back up, went out to that place where he found it, and buried it in the same spot.
Oh, wow.
It was a strange thing in the wood, but it wasn't anything paranormal. It was just
sweet,
you know, a good story. And that's,
that
was just the theme of this book. It had to be in the woods. Now, some of them are hair raising, but some of them are like that. And another one that's one of my favorites that's sort of paranormal and sort of not. There was a guy that lived quite a ways from his girlfriend's house. And this was back in the day when they called it courting or sparking.
Sparking.
He'd been over there Sunday after church courting this girl.
Sparking.
And sparking her up. And
sounds fun.
Had to make his way back home, and it was just past dark already. And the farm boy, you know, he had to get up early. The chores start early on the farm, way before daylight. So he's thinking, well, I can go down the road, and it's going to take me this long to get home. But if I cut through these woods, I can be home in half the time. I can get in bed early and still get up to milk the chickens or get the cow eggs or whatever they're going to do. You know, I'm being facetious there. But so he did that. And while he's going through these dark woods, off to one side, he sees a coffin with a glowing light in it. And it scares the holy you-know-what out of him. He goes running through the woods. I mean, the branches are catching at him, briars and stuff. He gets home. He comes stomping in. He's muddy. He's dirty. His Sunday go-to-meeting clothes are ripped to shreds. He's bleeding from the briars and stuff. And he just breathlessly, what's wrong with you? And he tells his parents what he saw. His mother, who was apparently like my grandmother, very superstitious, started wailing. Oh, it's an omen. It's a portent. You're going to die, or somebody's going to die. You know, And my granny was big on that. There was a sign, you know, that's, yeah. that's a sign that this is going to happen or that's going to happen. And just really worked the guy up. And he's, you know, just losing his mind because he thinks, oh, I'm going to die now. And finally, the father, the voice of reason, stands up and said, I've had enough. He said, come with me, boy. We're going to go see this light in this coffin. And he goes out there and gets close to where it is. He's shaking and shuddering. He don't want to see it. But he says, it's like right over there. And then holler right up to the side on the left. His father goes back up in there, waiting and listening. His father's got a shotgun with him and an old carbine lamp. And suddenly he hears this laughter. Ah, 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 ah. His dad steps back around and said, come here, boy, I want to show you something. And he took him around there, and it was an old tree that had rotted and fallen over, so it was a hollow log broken open. There was a spider web in there, and caught in the spider web was a lightning bug. We call him down south a firefly. So there's this in the hollow log with this firefly flashing on and off until he gets eaten by the spider. But in his mind, you know, being scared and wandering through the woods, he saw a light in a coffin.
Yeah.
Wow. And he said, if my daddy hadn't taken me back out there and showed me how foolish I was, I probably would have died of fright that night. I would have worked myself up to the point with my mother's help of where I would have had a heart attack. Wow. But that's another favorite story in there that sounds paranormal, but it's not.
Right.
Yeah. It's just, it's a strange thing in the woods. That was the theme. It had to be strange and it had to be in the woods, and strange is a relative term. So
I love that. That reminds me of actually a story, one of your personal accounts, only in big part, well, because if you were younger when it happened, you were with a friend, and then there was in the same way of a sort of, but a different sort of ending, but where your friend's father got involved and went to check on something. I don't know if you remember that story. It was the, I think I wrote that one down.
The Beast of Swanson Lane sounds like.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was a freaky encounter.
Do tell.
Boy, that's probably one of the two or three times in my life I've actually been frightened. I don't scare easy, but there's three times, and I can tell you all three of them depending on how much time we've got.
Let's do it.
Let's do it, man.
But that time, I'd gone home with this kid from school just for the day. I think it was on a weekend, but I'd gone over there. And they lived way back out on, this had been an old family farm that had been cut up. And their driveway was seriously, it was over a mile long gravel driveway, and you had to go up and around, and it was hard to get up there. Well, about halfway up, there, I said this had been a working farm at one time. There was some kind of old shack up on a hillside. And below that, there was like a shale pit or something there. They dug stuff out of the hillside for what purpose, I don't know. But there's a tumble down shack sitting up on top of that. Well, we had wandered back down there. We were scientifically minded. His dad worked out at Oak Ridge National Laboratory as well. And that was just, it was a weird thing because we're out in, you know, the middle of the country. And you had kids whose dads were PhDs and rocket scientists and stuff. And we went to school with kids of tobacco farmers and things like that. So it was an odd mix even in school. But we were scientifically minded, both of us. So we were going to go down there and look for fossils. We might thought, you know, we might find a trilobite or a dinosaur bone. You know, we had lofty expectations, always it is with shale. But while we were down there looking at that, we heard kind of a cross between a growl and a hiss or a moan. And we both looked up at the same time, and in that, the window, that little shack that was about to fall down, there was some kind of creature. And the only way I can describe it, it had what looked like the skull of a horse, but it still had eyes. But instead of a horse with the eyes are on the side, this was on the front and big. And it had that rictus grin, you know, because there's no flesh or anything on this skull-looking thing. But the eyeballs were, it was looking at us. And we screamed and ran back up the other half mile up the driveway. And we got there, and we were fit to be tied. His mother sat us down under an apple tree outside and was trying to get us calmed down. And his dad came out to see what all the racket was. I think he was trying to rest or take a nap or something. And we breathlessly told him this thing that we had seen. And he went inside, got his shotgun.
Now you boys stay here. I'm going to go down there and figure out what's going on.
So we're sitting there drinking our cherry Kool-Aid. I'm like, oh, I hope he's okay. You know, we're listening for gunshot. Nothing. About 15, 20 minutes, he comes back walking kind of slow up the driveway, got his rifle over his shoulder, shotgun over his shoulder, and comes over to us and We're like, well, what was it? What was it? He's like, nothing. But he said, I want you boys to promise me that you will never, ever play down there again. And that's a promise I kept. I haven't been back to this day. That's been 50 years ago.
That's super creepy.
But as far as I know, my friend didn't either. And later on in school, we independently of one another drew what we saw, and we drew almost the same exact thing. It was just such a weird thing to see. And a couple of weeks later, my friend told me, said, do you remember that shack where we saw that thing? And yeah, he said, well, my dad took the tractor and pulled it down off the hill into the shale pit and burned it.
Oh, man.
Wow.
And his dad was full Cherokee. He's full Native American Cherokee tribe. And in the last few years, I wondered if he didn't know what that was, if it was some kind of a skinwalker,
right,
or something that he knew what it was.
Dark magic.
And that maybe it was had been drawn to him, or it was after him, or who knows. I mean, they live that far back out in the woods. They like their privacy, but who knows what they did in their spare time when I wasn't around. They might have conjured some kind of native magic or something. But whatever it was, he didn't like it enough that he made us swear never to go back. And then he destroyed the place where we saw it. So again, yeah. But I was truly frightened.
So it looked like if you could describe it again, it was a horse skull. Is that what you said?
It looked like a horse's skull, and it was wearing something black, almost like a shroud or something covering the back part of
it. That's super creepy.
Oh, weird.
And it had these huge, huge eyes, but instead of on the side of the skull, like an actual horse, they were in the front.
Oh man, that's terrifying.
No eyelids, nothing blinking, but they were kind of moving. And the grin was just all teeth, but of course that's all it could be because there was no flesh or anything covered, but it looked like it was grinning at us. And unlike a horse, you know, a horse has those big flat teeth for kind of like a cow. This was canines, incisors. This thing would have bit you, whatever it was.
Straight out of a movie scene.
And I seem to remember it might have had antlers or horns or something. It was like a mixture of all these different things.
Yeah, Wendigo.
The true monster.
And that's what makes me think it might have been some kind of skinwalker, or maybe it was appearing to us that way or something. But he was not amused enough that he burnt that little shed down.
Well, I think that's an ominous sign right there when he knocks it down and burns it.
Burned it down.
Yeah.
Well, just the look when he came back up the driveway, he wasn't mad at us anymore for making a bunch of noise. It was just a very stern, very determined countenance that he had.
Yeah.
You know, and just, he was no fooling. He meant business. Don't ever go back down there again.
So did you got a sense maybe that he was worried about you guys going back down there maybe because of that and not just like, don't play
I on? Think so. Either he did see something and he knew it wasn't anything that he could deal with a shotgun, or he just didn't want us down there. But either way, I heeded his warning.
That's the reference, inferred reference, Jeremy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was
inferred.
I was inferring always. It.
Should we take a quick break and then maybe Steve could tell some of the more like creepy stories when we come back?
I will tell you that's probably the third of the three times I've been scared. That one would be number three. I'll tell you number two.
Ooh.
And then I'll give you a little bit of number one because it takes about a half hour to tell it.
All right, tease it.
That's quite a tease.
That's a great tease.
All right, guys. Well, stick around for Steve Stockton, our in-house incredible legendary storyteller. Oh, before we take that break, I'm going to let you in on what's coming up in the expansion. So if you guys aren't expansion members yet and you'd like to get double the episode, double the fun, every time we drop a main episode, we drop a paid members-only episode. So definitely come over and check it out. Go to Bleeful.com and hit the red button. It says sign up. Become an expansion member. Yes, but coming up in the expansion, we will have Steve for a little longer to continue telling us fascinating tales and personal experiences. And then once our conversation with Steve concludes, we'll be telling some personally selected stories from Steve's book in a very campfire-esque style. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We'll have everything from floating coffins, phantom trains, all manner of strange things encountered in the woods.
Yes.
It's going to be a great time. So guys, come check it out and we'll see you after the break. Welcome back, everybody. We have Steve, of course, with us. Super excited to have him here telling these incredible tales.
Happy to be the fourth brother of the whole tonight.
Yes,
absolutely.
I call you guys that, like the Brothers Grimm. You're the Brothers Hole. That's what you're doing to me is as important and culturally as important as what the Brothers Grimm did all those years ago.
I don't know if I can take that, but I will take
it. It's a tall order and very humbling, but yeah, we love it. Thank you.
I was going to ask you, Steve, if you can recall, what was to you the most frightening personal account? Your most frightening experience?
Well, yeah, John did. Before the break, John asked about a couple.
He said you had two.
Oh, that's right.
Let's work our way back to number one here. We don't want to leave our listeners hanging.
Yeah. I had three. I told you the third one. That was the Beast of Swanson Lane. I'll tell you the second. The second time that I was the most frightened, I was 8 years old. This was in rural East Tennessee where I grew up. Again, we had 26 and a half acres. Only five of that was cleared off. I was raised as an only. My brother was so much older. I was isolated. The nearest neighbor was a couple of miles away. So I had, the woods were my playground. I taught myself woodcraft and wood lore. I tried the scouts, but the same people that bullied me and picked on me in school were also in the scouts, so that just soured me on that. So I did my own thing. I'd get, books written 100 years ago and learned, how to make pine needle tea and all these things, build a shelter and lean to a figure four trap. I never trapped anything, but I knew how to do it. Well, I was playing in this one particular area. There was this huge ditch there. It was about maybe 20, 30 feet across and a good 10, 12 feet deep from the top where I could stand and look down in it. And my brother used to have hunting dogs, coonhounds, and he'd had a run up there for them, and he'd long since stopped that. So it was just like this open wire structure rusting into the ground. I'd walked up there. And I walked up to the ditch, and I looked down in there, didn't see anything interesting. I'd played in the other end of it a lot, on the far end of the property down near the road, but this was way back in the woods near the other end of the property. And I just, didn't see anything interesting, turned around to walk away. Well, suddenly I hear something down in the ditch. Sounds like a big animal. And I turned around, and just as I turned around, fellas, something came up over the lip of that ditch and was headed straight for me. It was kicking up leaves in its wake. It was shaking the ground. There were tree branches a lot higher than my head being knocked out of the way, but I couldn't see a thing. So once that initial paralysis broke, I tore off down the hill as hard as I could run, screaming. I was making such a commotion that when I got to the house, about a quarter mile, my mom was out on the back porch to see what I'd gotten into this time. But on this particular occasion, yeah, I think I went inside and got under the bed or something like that. But she finally got me out and got me calmed down enough to tell her what I had seen, or in this case, hadn't seen. And about that time, my dad got home from work. And my brother, who lived about 2.5 miles away, he stopped in just to be doing. And I'm still shook. And my mom's trying to tell my dad what I saw, and I'm trying to tell. And, finally, she's like, okay, what did you see? I didn't see anything. But it did this, it did that. Well, hey, my brother, go back up there. I wouldn't go. I'm like, nah, I'm not going anywhere near it. And they did see there was a disturbance in the leaves. They could see broken branches. So they come back and they're questioning me. Was it a bear? No. Was it a deer? No. Was it a skunk? No. You're naming things that I knew because I'd lived in the woods, grown up in the woods and in the Smokies. I knew what those things were, but you could see all those things. Whatever this was, I could not see it, but it chased me. I mean, it was close to me.
How tall do you think it was when it was breaking those branches?
Probably a good 10 or 12 feet. It was big.
Jeez.
And I mean, I could feel the ground, little vibrations in the ground. Well, the only time I went back up there kind of close a couple times, another time I had a kid come home and visit me from school, a kid named Johnny. And I'm like, Johnny, come here. I said, you go up there and stand and look in the ditch. I'm going to stay down here behind this tree. You go up there and tell me what you see. So he's up there. He's walking. I don't see anything.
Bait.
Didn't work. And I'm like, okay. I was getting a little braver now. You stay here. I'll go up with the ditch. So he's standing down, peeking around the tree. I'm looking around. Nothing. I thought, okay, I just won't play up here anymore. And I did. I avoided it until I was 15 years old. We had sold that property and subdivided it, and we're moving to a brand new house. Oh, about 7-10 miles away, closer to where I was going to go to high school. And I'd walked back up there just kind of, looking around, knowing that I'd never see the place again, or at least not under the same circumstances. It would be somebody else's property. And I walked up and I looked down in the ditch and I just kind of chuckled. I wonder what scared me when I was little. Of course, it'd only been like 7 years, but, when you're a kid, that was over half my life ago. from 8 to 15 was a long time, and I'm not so scared of stuff anymore. And just turned around, started to walk away, and I hear a familiar sound. Something in the leaves in the ditch. And I whip around, sure enough, something that I could not see comes up over the lip of the ditch. Leaves are being kicked up, tree branches knocked out of the way, the ground's vibrating. And I didn't run screaming and crying, but I didn't waste any time getting out of there. And that was the last time I've ever been there. But flash forward six years, I'm about 21, working in West Knoxville. And hadn't been back since we moved away from there about a month or two after that incident. And got off work one night. I was working at a fast food place just part-time while I was going to college. And a guy that I worked with invited me to a party that was just down the road at there's some condos or condominiums or something. And they had a clubhouse. They're, come on down. It'll be fun. There'll be a lot of people there. I'm not a people person anyway, but for whatever reason that night, I thought, okay, I'll go. So I went into the clubhouse of this place out by the pool. There's maybe 15 or 20 people in there. I didn't know anybody except for the guy that I worked with. And I didn't really know him other than just from work, just, you know, casual conversation and stuff. And I'm just kind of hanging out. Well, there's some girls there, and they found, I think they either found it or brought it with them, but they came out with a Ouija board. I think they found it under the couch in this clubhouse. So they're like, oh, let's do this. So they get the board out. There's like three or four of them. They're touching knees and got the board, and it's doing the figure eights. And they're going around the room asking people, you know, all this. I wasn't paying attention. And they got to me in my turn, and I thought, I got a doozy for you. The only thing I said, what scared me when I was a child? Now, there were several answers they could have given, the Beast of Swanson Lane being one of them. But the one I specifically had in mind was that invisible thing.
Yeah.
So the board starts doing its thing, and it spells out, I'm watching all this, WATERSPRITE, water sprite. They look at me like, I don't know. And they're joking, oh, well, the board's thirsty, it wants some water, it wants a sprite.
Ah, it wants a sprite.
They went on to somebody else and kind of forgot about me, but that stuck with me. And I think it was the next day I was off. I was either off the next day or the next day that I was off. I went to the big library in downtown Knoxville. This was way before the internet. And I went up to the reference librarian and I said, what can you tell me about a water sprite or a water spirit? So she runs off into the stacks. Well, the thing about this property that we lived on, there were seven natural springs there. Six of them flowed out of hillsides and one was artesian. It came up out of the ground. So there was definitely water there. And she brings back these books, and she shows me, it was a book there was stuff about the fae folk, but in particular, there was elementals. And there was a naiad and a dryad. A dryad is a spirit of the woods, and a naiad is a spirit of the water or a water sprite.
Yeah.
So there's your answer. According to the Ouija board.
Wow, that's crazy.
The thing that chased me out of the woods was a water sprite or a water spirit.
And it lines up right with a naiad. That's so crazy.
Now, why it only got after me, I have no idea. But what better place for a spirit like that to dwell than a place where there's seven? You know, seven is one of those numbers that has meaning. Seven springs and whatever this was. And I also found out much later that ditch line had actually been the old stagecoach road through that area going back probably to around the time of the Revolutionary War. So there was history there.
Wow.
And in the bottom, we called it there after he crossed the spring. We always had a garden spot down there. We had an acre or so cleared off down there. But it would feel creepy down there after dark. And I'd be out playing and I kind of forget myself and start getting dark. And I would run and get across the so all those springs flowed into a bigger creek or branch, which went on down into the lake. And I'd get the heebie-jeebies and I would run. And it seemed like once I crossed that little bridge that my dad had built, I was okay. Nothing didn't feel like someone was after me. And, you know, later on, read that supposedly ghosts can't cross running water. I didn't know that at the time.
Right, right. There's something about the water line, yeah.
But once I got across the water, I was fine. But down there, we clearing brush and stuff before, and an old dead tree that had been struck by lightning. We burned it and found part of a Civil War era bayonet blade that had been broken off in it.
Oh, wow.
So I think there had been a lot of bloodshed there. People, those water sources, it was down in a little hollow. They probably camped down there or got water down there and got ambushed because you could be anywhere up around on two or three sides of it and see who was down in there.
It's like a combination of things in that specific spot.
Yeah, it could have been any. And for all this, it was like just a microcosm of everything weird was in this few acres that I grew up on.
That's awesome. Created who you were.
Yeah. Back then, you didn't have a garbage pickup. You could haul it to Oak Ridge. This is Knox County. You could haul it to Oak Ridge, which was about 7 miles away to the dump, where you could legally burn your garbage. We burned our garbage. And where our garbage pit was, there was an old house that had sat there at one time. And that lady was supposed to be a witch. So on this one little parcel of ground,
all these things.
There was bloodshed and water spirits and the occult and witchery and things. And just that land was cursed or bewitched or something. And it just... What an awesome place to grow up, though, you know?
You were destined to be the author that you are today with all that.
I think so. I didn't. And then somebody said that, like, why do you pick such weird things to write about? And I said, I didn't pick them. They picked me, you know? It's
just... Right on. Yeah. Yeah. That's where I'm from. It's interesting, the water aspect. I was just going to mention this real quick, because we've talked about this before. We had an episode we did called Barricading the Boogeyman and Spirit Architecture.
Mm-hmm.
We just went down this road kind of on our own because we love this concept, because we'd covered stories. We heard stories about, you know, archways, things being seen within the doorway.
Corners of the room.
Yeah, corners of the room. You know, they used to build houses in certain regions of the country based on angles that seemed to catch energy.
Right.
Certain people coming from the old world, depending on which countries they come from, they'd try to build sort of circular houses to keep the corners out. But the water thing was always interesting.
Yeah.
And there was even, you know, you mentioning about the ghost can't cross flowing water. It's interesting because we did, in that episode we covered, I can't remember the name of the tribe, but it was just one of many examples where this particular tribe would bury their dead on an island within the nearby river because they believed that the spirits of the dead, if they were disturbed, couldn't cross back.
So the spirits couldn't come back across the water and get out.
Exactly.
That's brilliant. I like that.
Yeah, because these pop up all over the world, and they're like these connections that happen all over the world that are very similar things, like the Hagstone that we covered kind of recently.
Yeah, the Hagstone was another interesting thing.
So that's the rocks that they find that have the natural circle, yeah, in the middle of them. Yeah, and they find those places. How does that even happen?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I didn't realize that, like, the kind of the key element of that is running water. I never heard that. I don't know if it's folklore or if there's something to it, but
they don't work, right? On the water.
Magic can't work on running water, which is just an interesting connection to the same thing when it connects to spirit beliefs and crossing over water.
At least in the Norse folklore, yeah.
Right, this is with Norse folklore or old Celtic folklore with the Hagstone. Something about running water that erodes the magic, like it's a protective kind of boundary. So a hagstone will protect you from curses and that kind of thing.
There's magic in water. There's magic in iron.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that's supposed to protect
the fairies.
You from the fae.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing with the horseshoe above your door and luck and all that. It's actually a piece of metal there.
Yeah.
I had somebody send me an iron bracelet to wear when I'm out in the woods. It's supposed to keep me from getting taken by the fae. I've seen pictures of baby cribs that were made out of iron.
Wow. Yeah, keep the changelings out.
Or had pieces of iron to keep the from your baby from becoming a changeling.
Exactly.
Or they would pin the baby to the bed, pin the bedclothes to the bedding to make it harder.
Oh, wow.
To steal a baby. But
crazy.
And that's one thing, you know, I've delved into that. That's kind of the one thing that it covers everything. If,
yeah.
Because the Bigfoot people and the UFO people, they will all, they're ardent believers in what they believe in, but then you bring up the fae, they will snicker at you and say, oh, right, come on, you know.
It's really the umbrella.
But if you look at it, that is. That's the thing that ties everything together and puts a nice big bow on top of it. I know you guys are familiar with the fairy census and some of those modern day sightings.
Take it right over there.
But if you dig back into some of the old texts from the Celtic countries there, where the fae folk, that was almost a religion for those people and may still be.
Yeah.
I read accounts from, I think it was like the late 1700s, early 1800s, where they'd encountered little men in a horseless carriage that came down out of the sky. Well, that's a UFO sighting.
Yeah, exactly.
Where there's types of the fae that are hairy giants. There's your Bigfoot and your Sasquatch. It's all connected, Phyllis.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, little green men. I mean, you could apply that to either fairy or ET abduction. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, and missing time.
The almost religious side of it, there's a hierarchy. There's different clans. There's different types. And just about all of them hate humans.
Yeah.
And that's
not the friendliest
one. It's frightening to think about.
Yeah.
I think there's some credence to some of that. Now, whether it's actual fairies or some kind of entities or who knows what.
Right. Some grand trickster.
But there's something out there.
Yeah.
I hear stories about the fairy lights in the Great Smokies. I talked to a gentleman years and years ago. He's passed away now. He was up there before it was a park hunting. And his lantern had gone out, carbide light. And he saw somebody, he thought, with a lantern. He was going to follow them. He thought it was another hunter.
Uh-oh.
And he watched it go across this little area over to the other side. When he started to cross, he stepped off a little, about a 12-foot bluff there. Stove himself up real good. Had to go back the next day and find his gun. Couldn't find it in the dark. He said it was stuck barrel first into the ground.
Jeez.
But he said he thought that was somebody with a lantern, and whatever it was led him right off of that little bluff.
Oh, the lure.
Yeah.
So sometimes they will help you out and look and take you out of there, but other times they'll get you even more lost. What is that?
Yeah. That's fascinating.
That ties in a little bit with another friend of the show, Tim Marzenko, and his book, Disembodied Voices. We talked about the lure, the trap, and the lost.
Yeah, lure, trap, and lost.
Yeah, but that is specifically with the voices, but that's another thing you hear about.
The mimicking.
Whether it's music and in fey lore.
Yeah, the mimics. I've heard of people where they would hear sound like a loved one or a voice they recognized calling their name from a cave or farther deep in the woods. And if it was a voice they recognized, it was either somebody that had passed or somebody that they knew was thousands of miles away at that moment. And there's some stuff out there like that that I think...
It's frightening. And I think a lot of people don't take that stuff seriously, but I think there is a real opportunity for that sort of stuff to occur.
There's something to that.
Yeah.
And if you look at where these clusters of missing people are and look at a map of the cave systems in the U.S., there's a pretty good overlay there.
Yeah. Tunnels there. So
There's some things under the ground that are after us, too.
The amount of missing children every year is shocking.
Yeah.
Just the number. It's like unbelievable. I can't remember the exact number, but I was just like, I was completely shocked that there was that many just children that go missing every year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
460,000. That's the number every year.
Children go missing every year.
That's a lot. Now, of course, some of those are runaways. Some of those are non-custodial abductions.
Right.
Some of them come back. But there's a lot that's it. That's it.
Just gone.
Just gone. And they're New England. I did a video recently on the not the Burlington Triangle. I can't remember one of those triangles up there.
Bridgewater Triangle.
That's a place I can't wait to visit.
Yeah.
But it talked about the natives have the legend of a creature there that's either made out of rock or can disguise itself as a rock, and it will open up and grab people.
Yeah, such a familiar attribute.
You know, that's another thing. People that are lost sometimes will be found in or near a boulder field.
Right, boulder fields.
That's been searched previously, maybe many times, and they will look like they've fallen from a great height, but there's no height for them to have fallen from. But if you think about that, if there's literally something that either is made out of rock or looks like a rock, and it opens up and swallows people...
Yeah.
Say it gets whatever it needs out of you, your soul, your sustenance, whatever, and then spits you back out. You might look like you'd fallen from a great height.
It's terrifying.
So what is that? You know, it's just like...
Hike with a buddy.
Yes. Mysteries abound. And with that, Steve, I know you don't have a lot of time left with us, and we're about to go into the expansion. And if you guys aren't members yet, go to beliefhole.com, click on the big red Join the Expansion button, sign up, and you'll get bonus episodes. And today, our expansion episode, we're going to carry this conversation into the expansion with Steve. We're going to do some more stories, some more conversation. And then when we lose him eventually, when he has to go, we're going to select some of his works to do a real kind of campfire side storytelling.
Yeah.
With some of his stories.
That's going to be fun.
Some of the creepy selections of true strangeness in the woods. So that's going to be great. So go sign up. And with that, Steve, I really just want to thank you for being here. It's been an honor.
Yes.
I mean, I'm fangirling over you guys. This is just, like I said, this is the pinnacle. This is the my favorite show that I've ever been on because I love you guys so much. We've listened to every episode. I'm your expansion?
Expansion member. That. Yeah.
I've downloaded all those. I'm working my way through those.
I saw that. I was blown away. I was like, Steve Stockton is an expansion member. What is happening? Because I said before the show, and I don't think it was recorded, but I was going to say, we're huge fans of yours, Steve Stockton. I mean, I'll say your first and last name because it's very important. It's very
Mr. Steve Stockton.
Important for me to say that professionally.
That was funny.
You can call me Mr. Stockton. No, I'm kidding. Yeah,
how about Mr. Steve. Steve?
Mr. Steve, we're huge fans of yours.
Mr. Steve. You know, a lot of shows that I go on StreamYard, it has the little thing below it. I'm Mr. Midnight Society.
I love it.
Ooh, nice. Oh, there you go.
Throw it in there.
That's what I did.
A little curveball.
That would have been a great podcast name, too.
Mr. Midnight Society, yeah.
But yeah, we're big fans. I mean, obviously, like I think I said, I don't know if it was recorded, but Chris and I have listened to your show a lot. I think John Cena too, but Chris and I were subscribed listening to your show before you even reached out to us. We reached out to you but we started talking and saw you in the a premiere chat one time on YouTube, and we're super excited. So we've been mutual fans for a long time.
Yeah, and I'd heard you referencing my books. I was listening to your show one time, and then there's a guy that was that guy, Stockton, Steve Stockton. Yeah, and then you're talking about, I think that was my Great Smoky Mountains. Like, hey, wait, yeah, that's me. And, you know, that's awesome when
that's cool
when you're listening to something you enjoy, and then oh, yeah, there's your name.
Yeah.
And then I was watching one time, and then you had the book there behind you.
That's awesome.
And I saw it. Just, it was just the spine of it. All I could see was like this. And I did a screenshot, and I put a red circle around, and I sent it to Nicole. I said, look, look.
That's great. That's awesome. Speaking of book recommendations, where can everybody get your books?
They're available on Amazon, and as my publisher likes me to say, wherever fine books are sold.
Nice.
in print and ebook. And I have an Etsy shop. I can't remember. We've got a couple different URLs that'll take you there.
We'll have them in the show notes, too.
13pastmidnightsociety.com and stevestocktonbooks.com. Or if you go to Etsy, I think it's just Etsy/Steve Stockton Books. I've got signed copies there.
Oh, cool.
And I don't have a whole lot left, but I enjoy selling those. And you can put what you want me to, how you want me to inscribe them in there. And I've put some interesting matches in some of those. And I've often said I'll inscribe anything you want as long as it's not an IOU or I'm putting you in my will or something. But I love giving back to the fans that way. And they, yeah, they're about the same price that they are to buy them on Amazon unsigned. I just enjoy getting them and shipping them out. And
that's great.
Just doing everything myself. I love it. And now I've got Nicole by my side. She's a co-owner of the bookshop. We've got vintage paranormal books over there, ghost, occult.
Ooh, I'll have to look at that.
All kinds of stuff. Don't have a lot in the shop right now, but that's coming too.
Awesome.
That's
awesome. Every topic.
Mainly stuff from 50s, 60s, 70s, and some rare things sometimes. But I love books. And that's just me thinning out my collection. I've got easily several hundred books on the paranormal and stuff, and then thousands of ebooks.
Awesome.
I love to read. I'm a voracious reader. I usually read two or three books at a time, and not just paranormal. I'll read biographies or history or just, it's always a quest for knowledge. You know, you never learn too much, I don't
absolutely
think.
No, absolutely. Well, let me just say, listeners of the show right now, as you're tuning in, definitely recommend Steve's books. They're incredible. We've used multiple on our shows for press episodes. So check the description of this podcast episode or the YouTube video. Check the description. We'll have links to all of his books and ones we've used on the show, where you can find them, where you can get his signed copies from his Etsy store. And that'll all be there. You will not regret it, because these are some of our favorite books that we've read. And so we reference them regularly.
I've got a link tree that I'll send you that links to everything I'm doing. I've got four other YouTube channels that I'm working on.
Yeah.
13 Past Midnight, which is my first channel, my paranormal channel, Among the Missing, True Crime Breakdown, Insomniac Radio Theater, that's mine and Nicole's channel. I'm going to be doing some relaxation and guided meditation over there. People tell me
that's
how much
awesome.
They
you got the voice.
Listen to my voice to go to sleep or to beat PTSD, chronic pain, fibromyalgia. It's a gift, and I like to give it back to people.
Yeah.
And I've got Saucer Cult, which is my UFO channel. And the UFO stuff that fascinates me is the pre-abduction era stuff, back when it was really fun, when it was little green men and monsters and yes, weird stuff from space before they started taking people.
Silver jumpsuits and yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I love that stuff. Robots and things.
Right.
I love it, love it, love it.
Yeah, before the government got involved and pretended to be ETs. All right. That's a theory.
Yeah.
That's a theory. Speculative only. One of the theories. But thanks for coming on, Steve.
Oh, my pleasure. Again, this is, like I said, this has been a pinnacle for me. I feel like I've met some of my heroes. And
we feel the same, just so you know. We feel totally the same.
I don't see how you don't have millions of subscribers, and hopefully my lips to God's ears. But we're going to be collaborating some more. I know we're going to do some things over on probably both of my other channels sometime. I'd like to have you all on either as a group or individuals.
Be great.
To talk to you about things, either on Among the Missing or 13 Past Midnight, because I want to spread the whole.
Yes!
Yeah, you guys are awesome.
That means so much, Steve. Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Yeah,
this has been great. Yeah, everyone listening, if somehow you've lived under a rock and you haven't heard Steve's amazing voice on his incredible channel, Among the Missing, and then 13 Past Midnight and everything else he's doing, definitely check it out. Links in the show notes. Just, yeah, we're big fans. I mean, it's stuff we've been following for a long time, so you will not regret it.
We're mutual fans of one another's work. I think I fangirled harder than you guys did that.
I don't know.
And I've told people, this is the best produced podcast out there. Your production values far above. I mean, you set the bar high for anybody else.
Oh, thank you.
And all the years, the graphics, the sound, the topics, the amount of research and the digging that you guys do. Wow. You can't go wrong with Belief Hullet.
It means a lot.
I've sent so many people over to listen to you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
But again, with Nicole and I, it's a big part of our relationship.
That's so cool.
You are our date night. You are our listen to go to sleep thing. And she just over the moon when she found out I was going to get to be on with you guys. And thank you for letting her come and sit in the studio audience there.
Absolutely.
The
Hi, Nicole.
Remote studio audience.
Hi, Nicole. Thanks for joining us in the background.
That was a thrill for her.
Yes.
That's super sweet.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Steve.
My pleasure.
All right, guys. Well, we hope you enjoyed this evening with Steve Stockton. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But wait, there's more. If you are not an expansion member, sign up. Like we said, we're going to continue this conversation into the expansion with some great campfireside stories with Steve and some selected works. It's going to be a great time. Go to bleefhole.com, click on join the expansion button, big red button, and we will thank you for your support. And we will see you there.
We hope that you enjoyed seeing our faces. This is a lot of technical issues to figure out for this, but hopefully we can keep doing it if you like it. So let us know in the comments below.
And for those of you who signed up to be Black Eyed Cool Kids and Up and get your name right on the show, we didn't have time to do it this time since we're trying this whole new model with video and it was a lot of extra work and just trying to get it all in. But stick around. If you sign up, your name will be coming up on an upcoming episode. And thank you so much for your support.
Yes. Next episode, we will return with the thank yous.
Indeed.
Right on.
So you guys out there, go get Steve Stockton's books. Go subscribe to all his channels. Thank you so much for coming on, Steve. And until next time, stay warm by the fire. I don't know. What do you want to stay?
What's stay creepy.
Stay creepy. I want something original. Stay.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time.
Stay alive and subscribed to The Beliefful. See you next time on...
On Beliefful.
That was horrible.
That was sloppy, Dan.